Before we took a break for the summer, we had finished the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, the great practically oriented scripture for all mankind. And we were about to begin the third chapter. But let us first have some rehash of what we have already seen. We know that the background of Bhagavad Gita is a battlefield, which is the allegoric presentation of our life. Our life is struggle, battle, and battle between the so-called good forces and the evil forces within us. Good is actually something quite relative. Good and evil cannot be objectively defined very easily. But in one's personal life, we can understand what is good for us, what is not good for us. And the judgment for that can come when we see that there are forces in us which generate the feeling of oneness, feeling of love, feeling of truthfulness. And there are the opposite forces which are telling us to be divisive, to be selfish, to take the path of untruth. So there is a struggle between these in our lives. And at times, the conflict becomes so complicated that it is difficult to decide how one should act. The conflict comes because the border lines between what is true and what is not true, what is right and what is not right, what is desirable, what is not desirable, they become blurred in life. From so many different angles, the life is pulled here and there. And we are not sure which course will be right for us. We are not able to decide that taking which path we will become successful in life, which path will lead to blessedness and ultimate peace, against which path will lead to destruction. So, a conflict comes in life, and that conflict has to be resolved. Just as when we are driving, you come to a fork. Say you are driving full speed and you see the fork. Whether to go to left or whether to go to right. You have to take a decision. You cannot stop the car in the middle of the road either. So, what to do now? It is, a choice has to be made. And on what basis should the choice be made? The different options, they give very conflicting signals. There is attachment that we have formed with various things around us. Then there is the sense of ultimate truth, ultimate well-being. So, when they drag us in different directions, which course do we take? And it has been shown that, the two tendencies are clear in one's mind. The tendency that guides us according to likes and dislikes. and the other tendency that guides us according to what is right and what is not right. The two things are separate, two paths are separate. When we choose the paths according to likes and dislikes, it is not necessarily the path that is according to right and wrong. This is a very special feature of human beings. As human beings, of course, we have a lot of tendencies common with animals. But yet, there is this very special feature that we can separate between this what I like and what is right. Many things that I like, my mind gets pulled towards them, and yet when I screen them from this criterion, whether they are right or not right, then I see that although I like them, they are not right for me. And similarly about the certain things which I dislike, but when I look into what they ultimately deliver, I see that although I don't like them, they are right for me. Just to give an example, I like to eat sweet. I like it. Is it right for me? There it is a conflict. I know that it is not right for me, and yet, I like it. So it is a conflict. So how do I decide? One tendency tells me, no, say no to it, don't go by that, otherwise you will harm yourself more. Another tendency tells me that why should I worry today? Today let me eat sweet, from tomorrow let me practice controlling. For so many years I have been eating today, what difference is it going to make? I will start from tomorrow, which never comes. So it is, this is just an example that we are caught into this kind of situation all the time. So Arjuna is representative of all of us. He is the disciple in Bhagavad Gita. He knows there that he should fight the war. But fighting that war means fighting against somebody to whom he is attached. Also, that means a big loss of many people who are not his enemies on his own side, but he may find them killed in the battle. Even his own life is at stake. Who knows who will win the battle? Both sides were full of equal strength. In fact, it is shown that the army on the opposite side, Kaurava's army, was more. Pandava's army was less. So there was a good chance that they will be vanquished in the war and ultimately Arjuna will get killed. Who knows? So although he knew that he has to fight the battle, yet the mind got caught into these different thoughts, fears of what will happen, and so he decided that he will not fight the war. But that thought also he was not comfortable with, because he knew that it is not right to do it. This comes in our life when we want, when we know that we must fight against some wrong tendency in us. We know we have to fight it. Yet we postpone the fight, like I told what happens in my case. It is, we tend to postpone the fight or stop the fight or feel that what does it matter? Sometimes people say that after all the life is ephemeral. You tell us in the class, in the Vedanta, it is all written that it is after all transitory, comes and goes. So why should we worry about that? Anyway, it is all not real, is it not? So why, what does it matter? So we console ourselves and shirk away from the fight. So the meaning is understood in very wrong way. That was the case with Arjuna. And that does not bring peace of mind. When we shirk away from this battle, then inside us the conscience starts pricking. Hey, you are not doing right. You have made a commitment. You have decided something on the basis of what is right and what is not right. And now you are shirking away from that commitment. That will not allow you to be at peace. And so Arjuna understood that his understanding is all muddled up. He gives a big discourse in the first chapter. We see him giving a big discourse to Krishna that what are the bad effects of war and all that stuff. A long list. But after telling all that, he was in his heart, he was not comfortable. Krishna doesn't speak much while the Arjuna is giving lecture. Krishna doesn't obstruct him, Krishna doesn't want to say a word in the middle. If Arjuna is comfortable with what he is doing, let him do that. But when Arjuna asks his opinion, now Krishna tells him, and that is a very important verse in Bhagavad Gita, in the beginning of the second chapter, Klaibhyam Masma Gamah Partha Naitatvai Upapadhyate. Arjuna, don't give in to this unmanliness. It doesn't become you. Unmanliness means deciding not to stand up against these evil tendencies. Not to stand up for the truth. This is the cowardice. Don't succumb to cowardice. Stand up and start fighting. And Arjuna was shocked to hear these words from Krishna. He was expecting that Krishna will pat on my back. Wow, Arjuna, you are such a wonderful philosopher. You are a man of such peace and all that. He wanted to hear that from Krishna, but instead he gets a big blow. And that shakes him. Then he starts telling to Krishna, well, I don't understand what to do. So please accept me as your disciple and lift me out of this mire of terrible confusion that is generating such terrible grief in me. The grief that Arjuna describes, he says that I have fallen into this terrible grief which cannot be removed even if the whole not only the kingdom of earth but of even the kingdom of heaven, Rajyam Suranam Api Chadipatyam, if all that is given to me, still I see there is no way of coming out of this terrible grief. So I take refuge in you. And then Sri Krishna sees that the problem has to be diagnosed and needed to be given a medication that will completely cure. A medication is of two types. A medication that is a palliative, some symptomatic relief is given to the patient that, oh, there is terrible headache. So, right now something has to be done to get rid of the headache. So you take a Tylenol, the headache will go away. But that doesn't remove the cause of the headache. So you have to find out, diagnose and see that a remedy that will remove this cause is put into place. So Krishna sees that Arjuna is being buffeted in this likes and dislikes, and what is right and what is not right. His attachment to this world is the cause of that. And we get attached to the things which pass away, which change, which do not remain. We want to hold on to those. But those things which basically are transitory, we cannot hold on to them. They are continuously shifting, changing. And thus, because we cannot stick to them, they go away, we suffer in this world. The cause of suffering is this attachment. We want to hold on to all that things around us. We enjoy them and want that it must continue like this. My friends, let them remain my friends, and let them never die. I also should never die, and let this continue like this. Most of the times that is the idea of heaven that people have. Heaven means where there will be just the continuation of all the pleasant things that we have here, only without the fear of extinction, that they will never be gone. They will just remain permanently like that. That one priest was telling me that we have this idea that why we discourage divorces. Divorces are discouraged because suppose one of the spouses dies and goes to heaven. Now what will happen? Because we feel that those who are spouses here will be spouses in heaven also. It is just the continuation of the same kind of life. How long again? Well, the priest said that, well, I don't understand this idea, but that is how many of us feel, that it is the same continuation there also. We get attached to things, and therefore, when they go away, we get a big blow. So, Lord Krishna sees that this is the cause of suffering. How does the attachment come? What is the cause of attachment? The attachment, Lord sees, that is because of the ignorance. Arjuna is seeing, like all of us see, that I and the world, as we perceive it to be real, we see I and the world as real. And therefore, we get attracted to things or repelled from the other things. Some things get attracted to, some other things we get repelled from. And that there is no constancy about it. Certain things we get attracted to today, tomorrow we get repelled from them. It is not a constant thing. Certain things that gave us pleasure today gave us pain tomorrow. So, this is this world that is basically unreal. This I and the world, which is just a manifestation, illusory manifestation of God. When we take it as real, the problem comes. And we do not see the ocean, we are seeing the waves, and therefore are getting deluded by this. This is the ocean. Imagine, all these beings, the human beings, animals, things around us, they are the different forms of waves on this ocean, that is the truth or the reality. This is just one imagery, just for our understanding, that what we think as real, is it real? We have to examine that. So, Lord sees that this is the problem. And so, the medication now is to be applied, and he tells Arjuna that one must learn to understand the separateness between I and the body, the changing aspect and the non-changing aspect. Everything, whatever we perceive, if we critically look into it, has a changing aspect and a non-changing aspect. The non-changing aspect is kind of subtle, hidden by the name and the form. The name gives it a kind of unchanging identity, while the form keeps on changing continuously. Like Red Sox, baseball, famous baseball club of Boston, many of people here, they are Red Sox fans. So, Red Sox, what is it? It is, if you try to see what it is just name, nothing else. The players keep on changing, the owners keep on changing, managers keep on changing. Whenever they lose, sometime more often than not, the coach gets a kick and is sent out packing. So it is like that. What is Red Sox? It is just a name. What we call Red Sox, we really do not know. It is just a name. Same applies to almost everything. The material in that keeps on changing. What is called, for example, our devotee and friend Shantamma is sitting there. What is Shantamma? Material, the particles keep on changing. She ate a nice breakfast this morning, I believe she did. That was not she before that. It was not there before that. She was different than in the morning and now. It is every moment the particles are changing. Nothing is constant there except the name. She had that name when she was 2 years old. That name stuck with her when she is 50 years old or whatever, I don't know what age she has. That name will be with her even when she is 100 years old. But the appearance is completely different. So, the name is, it gives the illusion of the reality about that form. So, although everything is changing, we see that as unchanging. And there lies the problem. So, Arjuna is told, there comes a very beautiful verse there, that dehinosmin yatha dehe kaumaram yauvanam jara tatha dehantara prapti dhiras tatra namuhyati. Just as in this life itself we see a person grows from childhood, becomes a little grown-up person, a young man or woman, then becomes an old person, and nobody seems to feel any wonder about it, grief about it. But similarly, the next link in this same chain is passing from one body to another body. And why do you grieve about it? There is this self, or the reality in you, has not changed at all. It does not die. So, that is how we should learn to separate our changing aspect and our unchanging reality. that which changed, just as instead of putting a white shirt, you put a red shirt. It doesn't change you, it's only the shirt has been changed. You are the same person has put another shirt. So similarly, this person doesn't change by changing the body. Body is like a covering and not your real nature. You are not the body in the same way as you are not the shirt. Just as you are not your shirt, you are not also your body. This we must try to understand. As we understand this, this is not really intellectually difficult to understand. A little analysis will reveal this truth, this idea. But this needs to be again and again thought about, so that it becomes firmly understood, at least intellectually. Most of the verses in the second chapter are about this. But then comes the question that it is, suppose I understood it intellectually, it appeals. Many of us have that intellectual appeal for this Vedanta truth, that everything is really one reality, the soul is immortal, and this truth is spoken of by all religions. The soul is immortal, God is within us, God is the only reality. Well, yes, intellectually we understand it. Can that intellectual understanding become our practical experience? If it cannot, then, well, even if I understand it intellectually, how does it benefit me? So, this doubt is answered by Lord, saying that, now let me tell you, that is the 39th verse of the second chapter, that Arjuna is told there, that what I told you as an intellectual concept, now listen how that intellectual concept becomes practicable experience. It can be turned into practical day-to-day experience in your life. Everybody has that potential to convert this theory into practice. A theory and experience, there is a gap, and that is called the proper practice, or learning or training comes there. Like we read a nice book on swimming, and after reading that book we think that we have become, all that nice book was there, so I read it completely, so now I can become like Michael Phelps right away. It is hard work, tremendous practice has to be put in. Yes, reading a book, having an intellectual understanding, having intellectual conviction, very good, very important, it is a must, it is necessary, but not sufficient. That conversion of the intellectual idea into practical experience is called yoga. Yoga is that. Yoga word is used in Vedanta and other scriptures in this sense, that it is not a certain physical postures as it is many people understand, especially in the West. The word yoga is understood mainly only as having some exercises, some physical postures, and that's about it. It is not that the teachers of yoga say like that, but somehow the understanding of people is like that. It is and therefore it is a popular fad. I do yoga. It is told in New York, some statistician told in one of the conferences there on Gita, that in last some years, yoga has made, the word yoga has made more money than Microsoft. The word yoga has made more money. So, it is really speaking, the word yoga means this, the conversion of theoretical ideas into practical life. If it is not practical life, suppose I tell you that imagine you have $1 million. And doesn't make you use those $1 million unless you practically have them with you. So, similarly, unless these concepts do not become practical experiences in our life, they are not of much value. And there is a science, yes, practice. It is given to all of us to realize this truth. It is not limited, it is not monopoly of only some few. It is made available to everyone who care to put those things in practice. It is not that only a few people will be given this. Everybody who is ready to put in that much effort is can get it. Like if you follow a certain path, somebody asked me about the directions for the Vedanta Society, how we can come there. Well, I told that it is you can take this exit and come here, and all those details were told. Now, if that is the right path, then it is for everybody who takes care to come, who cares for it. It can be, it is not a monopoly of only some, only men are allowed by that road. No, whether you are man or woman allowed, you must have at least 5 feet, 6 inches height. No, it is not mandated, whatever may be your height, whatever may be your size or shape or color, whatever may be your age, if you can take the right path, you come to the right destination. So here too, if you have the right means, well, the right end is there. Implementation of the means is what is required. Swami Vivekananda, in that beautiful lecture of his, Work and Its Secret, tells that this is a great lesson he learnt in his life, to pay as much attention to the means as to the goal. Now he explains why this lesson needs to be learnt, because we do not normally pay as much attention to the means. We pay a lot of attention to the goal. The goal is so enchanting in our mental horizon. I am divine, I am all-pervading, I am immortal. Ideas are very good. But what about the practical experience? We have to put proper practice to realize those truths. So, while the goal is so enchanting, what happens is we forget that we have not practiced them in life. We have to put in efforts to make that matter of our experience. So, if we put in proper practice, yes, friends, each of us will get to that goal. Then, after telling the details of this, what is this secret of this yoga? He said there that you work. Don't try to run away from your works. Because that was the thought in the mind of Arjuna, and many of us get that feeling. So much problem. Working means very difficult. Otherwise, I feel quite peaceful. But when I go to work, my boss is terrible. Swami, you know that, and that person with whom I work, always very difficult. And my wife creates so many problems for me, otherwise I am peaceful. But look at her, you know, she doesn't let me have a moment of peace, always nagging about this and that and that. If the wives also have similar complaints in a different way, it is... So we all have these complaints, feeling about work, and feel that if we run away, go to a mountain peak somewhere and sit there, nobody to disturb me, all calm and quiet, and then I will be fully merged in my truth, my reality, all those problems should be gone forever. I will become Brahman in an instant there. All foolish notions, childish notions, but they come to us, all of us. It is, even with monks it happens. When we newly joined the order, thinking that after becoming going to the mutts, we leave all the household duties and cares and all, and go to our monastery, novices, and think that it will be all calm and quiet there. Well, the source of all the disturbance you carry within you itself, the mind is the source of all disturbance, nobody else. Foolishly we think that my wife causes problems, our own mind causes problems, they are put on somebody else. It is not so. It is, therefore, wherever we go, we will be carrying our problems, our disturbances, everything with us. Change of place is not going to bring about peace in life. What is going to bring about peace is to bring this knowledge into practice. And that is done by doing work properly. Work is not the problem. The way one does work, that way has to be changed. The method of work has to be changed. And that is told there, that work with the spirit of dedication. Don't expect the results. Keep on doing your duties. Don't get attached to the results thereof. A great lesson which in Bhagavad Gita, in the third chapter, it will be elaborated more. And that is what is told to Arjuna and showed in this second chapter, that how one becomes perfected by that. Then comes the question of Arjuna at the about 52 verses. There the question comes from Arjuna that, I understood all that. Now tell me, what are the signs of a person who has this knowledge functioning in life? How this person is different from me, an ignorant person? Is there a tangible change in the life of this person when the knowledge comes? Like if I say that this is the bulb, if I switch it off, it becomes dark. If I switch it on, it shines. If this is the situation, but if I say that I switch it on and nothing happens, if I switch it off, nothing happens, then why switch it on? If nothing, no change is going to happen, then what is the point? So, if practicing this spiritual discipline and getting this knowledge and getting this so-called experience, if nothing is tangibly changing in one's life, then what is the use? So Arjuna asked. Arjuna is a very dedicated student, but at the same time is not bogged down by the personality of the teacher. He asks questions. It is in Vedanta you will find this a very important trait, that ask question. Don't feel that no, you have to just listen submissively and whatever they tell must be it is true and just swallow it. No, ask question. Questioning is considered as the real source of getting knowledge. So Arjuna questions that what is the life of this person? And life means not the big deeds that person does. How? The walking of that person is different from my walking. I walk on two legs. And does this person after getting knowledge starts walking on hands? No. I eat some kind of food and does the food of this person change then? I talk in English. Or whatever language, if the knowledge dawns, this person starts speaking suddenly in Hebrew or Sanskrit or whatever other language. And Lord Krishna says that the change is there, a big change. But that big change is the internal change. Externally, the life will appear to be the same life, but the change will be there seen as in the change in the effects. Like when we switch it on, the shape of this globe doesn't change. The outer shape of this doesn't change. It is same. Yet, illumination is there. Similarly, when this knowledge dawns, the life becomes fully illumined because the desires are gone. The desires mean imperfection. Sometimes we don't understand that desires indicate imperfection. If I have any desire that shows that I am not perfect, I want something without which I do not feel perfect. So desires necessarily indicate imperfection. And as a result of knowledge, this person has become perfected, so all desires have completely gone from this life. And the results of the desires, they are also gone. That this person is not attracted or repelled. This person's judgment never gets clouded because of the attachments. Because this person has gone beyond all desires, the joy of this person is never ending. And never it has any adverse reaction. This is very interesting, friends, when we compare with our own lives, that our joys which depend on the desires, if the desire is fulfilled, temporarily we get a titillation of happiness. This, yes, I had a desire to have ice cream, I had the ice cream, and now I felt a sense of happiness. Till how long? Till the ice cream from here, from the mouth, went down the throat. After that, the joy is not felt any longer, it is gone. Then the hard work of digestion, it begins. So, all these joys that are outcome of the desires are like that. Whereas this person, being free from all desires, is truly happy, fulfilled, satisfied person. Not that he doesn't interact with the world. Interacts without desires. He is not a dead person. No, not at all. He lives more than anybody else. This person lives without getting affected by the world. So it is said that once a person gets to this knowledge, this person again never gets deluded. And here this second chapter ends and the third chapter begins with the question of Arjuna. Arjuna's question is very interesting because Lord Krishna has given such a wonderful description at the end of how this person of knowledge reaches the goal and is fulfilled, and there is nothing more to be achieved. There is this perfection manifest in this person. So, having heard this, Arjuna feels a bit dejected or concerned that, when knowledge just removes all the ignorance and now I feel I am the self, why, Lord Krishna, you want to put me into this horrible work of fighting the war against my own kith and kin? I don't understand. The dilemma is like this. Suppose you go to your physician and physician tells that this is a very nice medicine. This, if you take this medicine, it will completely cure you. You will be very healthy. No problem. This is the medicine. But I don't give you this. This is another this medicine. If you eat this, you will remain unhealthy. In fact, you will. This is poisonous. You may die quickly. You take this. Will I call this physician my friend? Will I like to take that? Obviously not. I will ask, well, you told that is the something that gives me the health, and this gives sickness, and you want me to take this? To Arjuna therefore asks Krishna like that, Jayasi Chet Karmanaste Mata Buddhir Janardana Tat Kim Karmani Ghore Mam Niyojayasi Keshava. So, this question is very deep. We don't have much time today to discuss that. It is, I will leave some time for you to ask questions if you have any, and then we will continue the discussion of this question, which is very important question. Arjuna, as I told, is our representative. Our question become vocal in the mouth of Arjuna. It is, otherwise we have no reason to study it. It is, if it is only Arjuna's question, why should Yogatmananda bother about it? It is not only Arjuna's question, it is a question in every heart that is finding vocal expression in Arjuna. And so we need to study it properly. And we shall study it by the grace of God next Friday. And if you have any questions, please feel free to ask. Yes, Maraya?
I'm begging your pardon, Swami.
Why? The Arjuna's question is, why you tell me that this is good medicine that will bring you like knowledge, and knowledge will remove all your problems. Whereas work is shown to create lot of difficulties. And if you glorify knowledge, but you want me to do this horrible work, why? If you say that knowledge is so superior, why do you want me to go on working in doing this work of war, not ordinary work, the work of fighting this war? Why? That is Arjuna's question. Won't you ask this question if your physician tells you that this is a nice medicine, you will be cured, but I won't give you this, I will give you this, taking which you will die? Will you come with that medicine and swallow it? No, you are far more intelligent than that. You will ask the doctor that if why you are giving me, do you want me to sue you for malpractice? Those days probably those laws were not there, otherwise Arjuna's question really amounts to that. Do you want to be sued for malpractice? Yes, please.
Swamiji, you gave this example of intellectual understanding that needs to be converted and creates a practical understanding. Based on that, how are the terms like viveka, vairagya, abhyas, and yoga then related to each other? How is that idea of practice, detachment, that clear understanding, and then that union? Or is one like yoga the technique, or how are the four related?
Yes, what the things you told, viveka, vairagya, and abhyasa, they are part of yoga. That is how they are related. It is yoga has various aspects, different parts. So intellectually trying to see that what is permanent and what is transitory, that is a practice that we have to keep on doing. That whenever we come in a situation thinking that, well, what is the permanent of it and what is the impermanent passing away part of it, and don't lay emphasis on what is passing away, what is changing, but lay emphasis on what is permanent and unchanging. And this is the abhyasa, is to do irrespective of whatever other things they come in life, to stick to one's discipline. That is called abhyasa. Like we decide that yes, I will get up early in the morning and do my prayers and meditations no matter what comes. So we have to stick to it. Why? Because when we stick to it, our resolve increases, our willpower increases. If we do not do that, then the willpower goes on diminishing. It is that is how we destroy our own willpower. If we act on our resolves, then that increases the willpower. If we do not act on our resolves, rather say, oh, maybe, you know, forget it, or from tomorrow, then we deplete our own willpower. So these are all parts of yoga. So let us conclude with the closing prayers. As you know, our programs have begun in full swing from 14th last Sunday, and tomorrow there will be the guided meditation, there will be the CD for the guided meditation at 11 o'clock in the morning. So, and then on Sunday there will be the Sunday service. A spiritual retreat is coming up on October 11. There is the notice board outside about it. Those who want to join, that it is a day-long spiritual retreat, and those who would like to join, please, they have to sign up for that. So please take a look at that. And I will conclude with closing prayers. Today, immediately now, I will have to start on a trip to Rochester. I will be driving myself and my friend Paul. We will be driving to Rochester, New York. I have to give a retreat there tomorrow. So, today I will not meet you outside after the class as I normally do. You will all be given that easy pass. You can just go. And there are some sweets kept in the library for you to take a few pieces, these Indian, those round things called jalebi. Many like that. So they are kept there. So before you leave, please take a piece and then go. गीता सुगीता कर्तव्या किमन्यत् शास्त्र विस्तरैः या स्वयं पद्मनाभस्य मुखपद्माद्विनिसृता एकं शास्त्रं देवकी पुत्रगीतं एको देवो देवकी पुत्र एव एको मन्त्रः तस्य नामानि यानि कर्माप्येकं तस्य देवस्य सेवा श्रीकृष्णार्पणमस्तु।